Welcome to the Restore Church Sermons Podcast. We're so glad you joined us here today. We hope that through this message, you are encouraged, challenged, and strengthened. If you want to know more about Jesus, Restore Church, or have any questions, please head to restorechurch.com.au.
Good morning, church. It's great to be with you this morning. Today we're going to be doing the second part of the mini-series I started last week on forgiveness. You know, that light and fluffy feel-good series that I'm doing on forgiveness. If you didn't catch last week, you can see it on Mr. Week on our app or on YouTube. I talked about the practice of forgiveness and breaking the cycle of retaliation and revenge. So you can catch that one. This morning, I want to talk about the price of forgiveness. And most of us would agree that forgiveness is a good thing, if not a difficult thing at times, it's definitely a good thing. And most of us have little trouble doing it quite regularly. In fact, within the context of healthy relationships and, you know, minor infringements, so to speak, most of us are not even conscious. We're not even thinking about the fact that we are forgiving on a regular basis. We're just doing it, and then we're moving on. But not everything is so simple or straightforward in life. Life can be complex. It can be complicated, and not all relationships are healthy, and not every matter is a trifling matter. Some matters are huge and deep and complicated. So what do we do then? How do we navigate forgiveness then? Because sometimes it's a complicated issue. I mean, for example, what about repeat offenders, people who keep offending? What do we do with them? Do we just keep forgiving? And what does that look like? What about the big things, the really serious things in life? I mean, how much do we have to forgive? Is there a line? Is it possible that people can just go too far, or they can actually cross that line, and there are things that we can't or maybe even shouldn't forgive them for doing? And what about justice? What about fairness? If we just forgive people, aren't we just overlooking the wrong and letting them go? I mean, how does that work? Well, they're all really good questions, and we're going to look at that, all of those issues actually, in this parable that's in your apps this morning. And it's a parable of Jesus that addresses all of those issues. But to be honest, I'm going to spend the majority of my time on the third one, the thing about justice and about fairness, because I think after looking at it, and you would know this from experience, it is definitely the toughest one to get both our heads and our hearts around. So I want to look at that more in depth this morning, although we'll cover the other two as well. Anyway, this whole interaction between Peter and Jesus that we see in this parable, it begins before that. Jesus is actually teaching his disciples and others about what life in the kingdom looks like. And he says, look, if someone offends you or does something wrong against you, here's how you're to deal with it. And the first step is you are to go to that person in private and try and sort it out. Now, could you imagine how different the world would be, how different relationships would be, how different churches would be if we practice just that one thing? When something goes wrong in a relationship, when someone offends us, either intentionally or unintentionally, someone does something against us, rather than getting all sort of bent out of shape and getting all bitter and gossiping about them or whatever it is, we just went to them and we said, can I talk to you please? Because this, and Jesus said, you know, if we do that, there's a really, really strong chance that you've won your brother or your sister over and that's the end of it. You know, you're reconciled and you move on. And then he says, but if they're not prepared to listen to you, then take along a witness. Now, that doesn't mean someone to help prosecute your case against them. It's a witness who's someone who might be privy to the situation, or at least can be privy to your attempts to try and resolve this. They can sit there and they can act a little bit impartially to try and help make sure you're both hearing one another and not missing one another. And he says, if that works, that's great too. But if in the final analysis you've tried both of those things and the person still refuses to acknowledge what they've done or take any ownership or apologise or anything like that, then you're to take it to the church. And you know, sometimes we do come across people like that, people who for one reason or another, either because they're stubborn and they're hard-hearted, or sometimes because for some people it's just so difficult for them to admit they've done something wrong because they're deeply wounded people. Just take it to the church, and then the church can actually deal with that. But the whole point behind that process is it's restorative. It's not punitive. It's not about punishing someone for doing the wrong thing. The goal is always trying to bring about restoration for that person and for that relationship. Anyway, Peter pipes up in the middle of that and he says, okay, then how many times do I need to forgive someone? How about seven times? Now, Peter's actually been quite generous. The standard of care back then was I think the Pharisees had said three times. Three times is as much as you need to forgive someone. After that, you know, three strikes and you're out type thing, you know. Woohoo! So Jesus says seven times. And he's being generous, right? And seven's a divine number, isn't it? It's the number of God. So, hey, here's a godly thing. I'll forgive seven times. And Jesus says, no, not seven times. 77 times, or as some translations put it, 70 times 7. There is literally ambiguity around what the text actually says. It's very hard to translate. It could be 77 times. It could be 70 times 7. But Jesus' point is not that we're to forgive 77 times or 490 times. Jesus' point is there is no limit to forgiveness. If people keep sinning against you, you keep forgiving them. Now that doesn't mean that you just let someone keep walking all over you. Jesus is not saying, hey, the best way to be a Christian is to be a complete doormat. Forgiveness isn't being stupid. You can put that in the chat. You can tweet that if you like, you know, tweet that. Forgiveness isn't being stupid. It's not being naive. It's not being an idiot. Forgiveness is not being a doormat. Forgiveness is forgiving people. Forgiveness is actually involves setting really healthy boundaries sometimes. And I'm going to look at that more next week around some of the practicalities of forgiveness. But forgiveness, it's not mutually exclusive to setting healthy boundaries. Forgiveness and trust, they are two very separate things. Okay, but we'll look at more of that next week. But irrespective of other considerations, Jesus is like, we continue to forgive. There's no limit. We just continue to forgive. But what about the extent of forgiveness? How far do we go? Like I say, how much can we forgive? Is there a line that people can cross where it then becomes okay for us to go, sorry, that's just too far, that's just too hard, that's just too much? Well, the answer to that and the other question about injustice and justice, well, that's in this parable that Jesus tells. It's a jam-packed parable. There's a lot in it. We're not going to cover everything. I'm just going to stick to two things today. But the thing I love about Jesus not just giving Peter his answer, you know, 70 times 7, and then going on to tell this parable is, as always with Jesus' parables, and he told lots of parables in response to questions, was that parables are not simplistic, one-size-fits-all templates for do this in every situation, right? That's not what it is. They're stories that are rich and deep and complex, and we have to wrestle with them. We have to learn to see ourselves in that. We have to be able to look at the nuance and the variables in it and work out what God is requiring of us in any and every different situation. You know, it's not like this issue came up, so I did this then, and that's going to be directly transferable to this situation. No, these parables, they speak to us on so many levels, and we get not just see ourselves, but others and even God in these stories, and we're to reflect on that and work out what it means for us to respond in this situation. So anyway, let's just quickly go through the parable of the unmerciful servant. How many times do I forgive? Seven times? Nope, 77 times. And in verse 23, Jesus says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Well, since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. Now, just an aside, even doing that was not even going to come close to paying off what this guy owed, right? This guy owed at least 20 years worth of his salary, okay? So it's not even going to come close. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. That's delusional. That's not going to happen, mate. The servant's master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go, right? So big point here. He didn't agree to being paid back. He cancelled the debt. He forgave the debt because it was an unpayable debt. Now, that's going to become really important in what we're going to talk about today. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins, which is about the equivalent of one day's wage. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, 'Be patient with me and I will pay it back.' But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw that it had happened, they were outraged, fair enough, and they went and they told their master everything that happened. Then the master called that servant back in and he said, 'You wicked servant, I cancelled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you?' In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should be paid back all he owed." We'll talk about that another day. "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart." So we looked at how many times do we forgive someone? Unlimited. So what about this next issue of how far do we go with forgiveness? Where's the line? Is there anything too far or too hard to forgive? Well, what Jesus seems to be suggesting in this story is that there is no line. The servant owes his master an unpayable debt. Like I said, at least 20 years worth of wages. So it wouldn't matter if he'd worked every day for the next 20 years. It wouldn't matter if he had worked multiple jobs for the next 20 years and sold everything that he had. There was no way he was going to come close to being able to pay off that debt. The master forgave an unpayable debt. So there is no cut-off point in that. There is no too far. There is no too much. And that's how it works between us and God, right? This is the point of this story. You know, within this story, we're meant, these characters represent people. The master represents God. The unmerciful servant, well, that could be us in any and every given situation. And the person that he takes out his frustrations on, they're the people that owe us something because they've offended against us. But that's how it works between us and God. We have been forgiven an unpayable debt. And it doesn't matter what we do. No one is ever too far for God's forgiveness. And Jesus' point is, if none of us are ever too far for God's forgiveness, then no one is ever too far for our forgiveness. There is no line. There is no too hard or too far. We're not just to forgive repeatedly. We're to forgive unconditionally. Now, I'll admit it's easier said than done because God's limit and capacity for forgiveness is much greater than mine. And I'm sure it's greater than yours too. And you know what I'm talking about. I mean, we've all got our limit and we don't even know what that limit is until it's tested in some way. You know, I know for me personally, someone does something to me, you know, I can get really bent out of shape about that just as much as the next person. But I can usually get over that pretty quickly. I can forgive a lot of stuff that's been directed at me. And you know what? Over the years, I've had to forgive a lot of stuff that's been directed against me. But you do something to my family, you do something to the people I love most in the world, and I've got a different standard there. I feel that a little more acutely, and I'm not so sure I'm going to be so ready to forgive or to forgive so easily when you hurt the people that I love the most. So that line, that differs for us all, and it depends on what the issue is. But sometimes the price of forgiveness is just, it's just too high a price to pay. And it seems like such a completely unfair thing to do. And so that's why we struggle with it. And we think that's gone beyond what I am willing or able to do. So this brings us to the third issue. What about justice? What about fairness? What about who pays for forgiveness to be granted? When we think about forgiveness and justice, we often fail to recognize that there is a true alternative. We tend to fall into the trap, or we might fall into the trap, of thinking that forgiveness and justice, as if they're kind of mutually exclusive, or at least separate things. There's forgiveness and there's justice. And you can forgive and you may not get justice, or you can forgive and you might get justice. But what if they're not separate things? What if they're not actually mutually exclusive? What if justice could actually be had, could be found through forgiveness? When the unmerciful servant found the guy who owed him a pittance, he went for justice the only way that you and I know how, for payback or for punishment, to get restitution or to inflict some sort of retribution. So that's the way we think about justice, isn't it? You know, you're going to pay for this, right? Justice needs to be satisfied. And the only way that justice is satisfied is there has to be a payment of some sort. Either you're going to So they're going to be restitution, you're going to give me back what has been lost in some way, or you're going to pay for it in some way by being punished, right? But either way, this wrong is going to be redressed by you in order to satisfy me. See, when someone wrongs us, hurts us, offends against us, I love this parable because it's a great way to think about it. When someone does something against us, a debt is incurred. So if you want to think about the hurt that or the offense that comes, a debt is incurred in some way. So someone is now indebted to us in some way. They know they now owe us something, and it needs to be paid and it needs to be righted. Now we can forgive, but justice also needs to be served in some way. We can't just let it go because that's not just. And in our minds, the only way for justice to be served is for, as I said, for someone to make up for it in some way, either through restitution or to be punished for it in some way through retribution. Like, so in this story, when the unmerciful servant finds the guy that owes him a lot less money, okay, he actually, his only way of thinking that he could get justice to be served was for this guy to either pay him back immediately, give me back the money you owe me. And when the guy said, I can't do that, I can't actually pay, well, then you're going to pay for it another way. I'm going to throw you into prison and you're going to be punished for it. And you're going to make it up to me in that way, retribution. That's our idea of justice. And that actually, that makes sense to us, right? That's how it works. Someone does something wrong, they pay for it in some way. So when it comes to forgiveness, most of the debt, but if we actually think about it for a minute, are any of the debts that we incur actually repayable at all? So if you think about it, are any of the debts that we incur when someone offends against us, when someone does something against us, are any of those debts actually repayable at all? Are any of the wrongs done to us actually completely objectively rightable? So when it comes to forgiveness, most debt that we incur, it has been in the form of things that are not easily repayable. It's our trust that's been broken. You know, we've been betrayed. There's been an emotional cost. There's been loss. There's been pain. Someone betrays you, right? How do they fix that? What's the value that you place on that? How do you measure that? Okay, how do you know when that debt is repaid? Someone trashes your name. Well, what does restitution look like in that? And God forbid, someone hurts or even kills someone that you love. How do they ever make that up to you? What does restitution look like? What does a form of punishment look like that will ever actually fix that for you? How does someone fix something they broke when the cost isn't tangible? Now, I'm not talking about the legal justice system, right? Sometimes when people do things and they do things to us, they have to face the consequences of that. There are legal consequences to that, and they have to face them. And you know, that's just the way it is. But that is a separate issue to personal forgiveness. Someone can be thrown into jail or be fined or whatever it happens to be for their doing, and yep, legal justice has been satisfied. But does their punishment heal our heart? Does their punishment undo the damage that has been done to us? Does it ease the pain? Does it nullify the loss? See, here's the thing I want us to understand. The justice that we need, that can never be achieved through restitution or through repayment, personal or legal. There are times where the hurt and the pain that we suffer, they're just not reversible. They're just not fixable at all. There's no way of making the offender make it up to us in any way, in any meaningful way. And Jesus makes this point in the story. I mean, it's in this story. It's there to see. Even though the unmerciful servant threw the guy that owed him money into jail, he never got his money back. Someone is punished, but it changes nothing for the guy that is still owed something. He's still out of pocket. So forgiveness, like, it is a wonderful, powerful, life-altering thing for those of us who extend it, and can be for those who receive it, though, you know, it is contingent on you receiving it. It's a wonderful, powerful thing. But here's the rub with forgiveness. Forgiveness is accepting that we are never getting our money back, so to speak. That's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is accepting the fact we're never getting that money back. That wrong is never going to be righted. That's actually what forgiveness is. I mean, you can throw your offenders in prison as long as you like, whatever. It's not going to undo what has been done. People can be tortured. You can inflict your own form of punishment on them in some way. You can do all sorts of things, but it's never going to undo the damage that's been done. It's never going to heal your heart. It's never going to erase the pain. Okay? It's never going to undo that stuff. It's never going to right the wrong in any way, shape, or form. You can want done to them whatever it is that they have done to you, and that's the logic behind the death penalty as well, isn't it? You know, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that type of thing. And you know what? There are times where in seeking retribution for things that have been done to us, there is that brief second of satisfaction where someone is finally getting what they deserve. But once that passes, and it will pass very quickly, we're left in exactly the same situation of realizing that even though we have done to them what they did to us, we've inflicted the pain on them that they have inflicted the pain on us, our pain is still there. It's just as real. It's just as live. Our loss hasn't gone away even by inflicting loss on them. So it peaks for a second and we go, yeah, justice has been done. But there's still the pain. There's still the loss that we carry. Justice in the form of restitution and retribution can never undo and can never heal what has been done or make up for it in any way. And if we insist on it as a condition for forgiveness, right, then it's not forgiveness. And I'm going to look at that in a second. We have to find a better way, one that doesn't require punishment or payback, one that doesn't require restitution or retribution. And there is a way, there is a way. There is a true alternative, and that would be the way of mercy. There's a story set in the Napoleonic Wars, and it's the story of a young soldier in Napoleon's army, a young French man. And he fell asleep when he was on watch, and because that's a grievous offence in the military, because it places everyone at risk, he was court-martialed and sentenced to death. Well, his mother was informed about this, and she personally went and saw Napoleon, and she begged for his life. And for reasons, I mean, who knows, maybe he was this type of guy, but Napoleon granted her request. He granted clemency to her son, and he was freed. No punishment. And Napoleon's officers were absolutely apoplectic about this. They were so angry because they said, this young man, he doesn't deserve mercy. He deserves to die. And Napoleon wisely said to them, well, if he deserved mercy, it's not mercy. If people earn our mercy, or they earn our forgiveness through retribution or restitution, then it's not mercy and it's not forgiveness. It's repayment of some description. Now, if the way of mercy doesn't seem fair, you're right. It's not. It's not fair. But who said forgiveness was fair? Maybe that's part of our difficulty with forgiveness. We want it to be fair. And I think what makes it easier for us to be able to forgive is if we can accept up front, forgiveness isn't fair. It's not fair at all. That's why the cost is so high. There's no fairness in this story. There is no fairness in this story we read this morning. The master forgives the unmerciful servant's debt. He doesn't get his money back. That's not fair. Okay, it's gone forever. But we need to realize that he was never going to get his money back anyway. He was never going to get it back by seeking some form of payback because the guy could ultimately never repay him anyway. He was never going to get it back by throwing the guy into prison, which he initially considered, and selling his wife and children until all that could be satisfied. He was never going to get it back. But the big truth we often miss is just that. That no matter what we do, whether it's restitution or retribution, we're never getting our money back, and that's not fair. It was a debt that couldn't be repaid, and just like the debts we incur when people offend against us, how do they ever really right what has been wronged. They can't. So what happens to the dead? Because this piques our sense of justice, right? What happens to the dead? It can't just disappear. We can't just pretend it didn't happen. We can't just ignore it. I mean, it's a thing. It occurred. It's out there, right? It's happened. It's had its effect. Just forgetting about it, just skimming over it, just going, oh, look, just don't worry about it. That's not justice, right? That's actually disingenuous. That's setting you up for problems later. And in fact, just an aside, and if you want to know how boring I am sometimes, I'd finished reading a book about Spain, because we'd traveled to Spain, we were going back there, and I wanted to know more about the country. And they were talking about what happened after the Spanish Civil War and the death of Franco in 1975, and why they're still having trouble today, and why you can't talk about the Civil War in Spain today. And that's because after Franco's death, they decided they would have collective amnesia. They would have this agreement where they all agreed to forget about everything that had happened, which left the guilty unpunished and the victims without a voice. And it's been disastrous. So you can't just forget something has happened. You can't just pretend it didn't happen, ignore it, hope that it goes away. We've moved on from that. You've got to face the thing square in the eyes. You've got to look at it front on and deal with it. So just forgetting about it or skimming over it isn't justice. It's got to be accounted for. So how do we do that? Where does it go? What happens to it? Who pays? Well, in this story, and it's there for us to see, in this story, the master pays. He absorbs the cost. He forgives the debt. And in your story and in my story, when it comes to forgiving people, we pay. We absorb the cost. We pay the price. This is the way of mercy. And if you don't get anything else I say today, I hope that you get this, right? This is the way of mercy. This is what forgiveness actually is. We pay the price for the sins we forgive. We absorb the cost. It's not fair, but it is the way of mercy and it is the way of forgiveness. It's what God has done for us on the cross, isn't it? I mean, the cross, it's less about the payment of sin. It's less about the punishment on our behalf than it is about the absorption of injustice that is then recycled into forgiveness. Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. The idea that the cross was payment for the debt that we incurred misunderstands forgiveness. I would, if you've been around for a while, you've probably heard me talk about this. If you haven't, don't panic. We can have a conversation about this. But I think it misunderstands the gospel as well. And it definitely misunderstands this parable, which is often held up to us as an example of God's forgiveness in us. I say, God is the master, we are the unmerciful servant, and other people are the people, you know, that he takes it out on. So this is a story about divine forgiveness as well. And yet we overlook this salient point here that in this story, there is no repayment for the debt. There is no punishment in order to forgive the debt. Okay? It just doesn't happen. But payment and punishment as a way of achieving justice is so baked into the way we think about things that we actually have to read that back into the story, even though it's not there to begin with. What you notice is that the master forgives the debt. He doesn't then have to go and find someone else to extract payment from or inflict punishment on in order for him to forgive. He just forgives. It's his debt to forgive, and that settles it. If he went and found repayment, if he went and punished, then it's not forgiveness, it's repayment and it's punishment. That's in this story. So if there's repayment or punishment of any sort that make up for that wrong, it's not forgiveness, is it? Any more than mercy that is deserved is mercy. The debt isn't ignored. That would not be justice. It is paid for by the forgiver. Now again, that is not fair. It is not fair at all. Why should the offended have to pay the price for the offender? Because we're the only ones who rightfully can. We're the only ones who legally and morally can. We are the wronged. It is our debt. Only we can genuinely, legally, morally, ethically forgive that debt. Only we can pay the price of forgiveness. For justice to be done, we can't ignore it. Someone has to pick up the bill. And with forgiveness, it's us. We absorb the cost and bear the brunt of the offences we forgive in the same way that God in Christ on that cross absorbed that injustice and offered forgiveness in return. We pay the price, we pick up the bill. But justice has to go beyond simply balancing the books and evening things out and cancelling the debt. Justice is also about making things right, making things better, not just about reconciling the accounts, but about bringing restoration. While I was in lockdown, I don't know about you, but there were days where, you know, I might have a day off, and because my options were limited in that I had 5 kilometres to travel in, and I think I'd pretty much explored my 5 kilometres. I'd sometimes go on, I'm not a big one for watching telly, but sometimes I would sit down and I'd flick on YouTube. And I found this story one day, which was absolutely captivating. It was set in New Zealand, and it's a very recent story. It was a story of a father whose son had been murdered by one of the most vicious gangs in New Zealand. And this crew was following this father's story. And so what had happened was his son, who was a lovely young man, he'd been in the military, you know, he was a good guy. He had stepped in one day to save a friend of his from being beaten up by this gang. And this gang, obviously, to save face, you know, they were so affronted, they decided, we're going to get you. And so, maybe I think it was days or weeks later, they tracked him down and they killed him. Well, when they did this, this father initially just absolutely, you know, not just grief-stricken, but hell-bent on revenge. He wanted to kill the men who had killed his son. Perfectly normal, rational, completely understandable reaction. Yeah, if you know, you've got children, you know how that would feel. But somehow, instead of that happening, he ended up in church. Not something he did regularly or if at all. And he got saved. And when he got saved, he knew that revenge was no longer an option for him. That the only real option for him was forgiveness. But he didn't want to just leave it at, I'm going to forgive this and now I'm going to move on. He wanted to meet with the man who had killed his son. He wanted to look him in the eye and he wanted to tell him that he had forgiven him. And so through a restorative justice program that operates over there, they made contact, and after months of, you know, back and forth about how is this going to work and does this guy in prison even want to meet this guy, which he did, to his credit, he wanted to meet him. The documentary crew followed this father into the prison that day. And it was one of the most powerful things I've ever seen. The meeting of these two men for the first time, this man who'd suffered an unthinkable loss of a son that he loved, and the man responsible for his death. This man walks in and the father stands up and walks over to him and grabs his head and gives him the traditional Maori greeting and then clasps his elbows with his hands and he looks him in the eyes and he just says to him, I want you to know I forgive you, brother. I forgive you. And the other guy is just dumbstruck. Like, he's had a little bit of time to adjust to the idea that he's going to meet this man, but he's not ready for this moment. But this guy that's killed this man's son, this hasn't come out of nowhere. This guy's got an absolutely awful history. You get to see the interview with him and his history, and he's terrifying to look at. He's got this massive mullet, he's tattooed all over, all his teeth have been taken out except for some fangs, and you know, he's a big unit, right? But he's all he's ever known is a life of violence and a life of rejection and a life of crime. He was you know, alienated from his mother, he was alienated from his own children. And so he chose a gang to find that sense of love and acceptance and family that he couldn't find anywhere else. But unfortunately, violence went with it, and that's how he dealt with everything, you know, revenge and brutality. So when this man looks him in the eye and forgives him, this triggers something in this guy. And the fact that he's in prison again, this is not his first rodeo with prison. It triggers something in this guy. And they interview this guy, and what happens is he is reconciled with his mother. He's reconciled with his children. And he starts studying, because when he gets out, he's going to make something of his life. And at one point, the father is asked if we could let him out of prison now. Should we let him out of prison now? Not that it's down to him, but he's like, I've forgiven him. What you do with him what you want. And this guy says, I don't want to be let out of prison yet. I'm not ready to re-enter the world. I've still got work to do. Which I thought, that's quite amazing. But the fact is, this one act of forgiveness, it doesn't just deal with the problem. It doesn't just deal with you know, the justice issue. Like, it brings restoration in a way. It creates something new out of something horrible. Nothing will bring this man's son back. Nothing at all. Nothing will ever ease his pain. Nothing will ever fill in that massive hole that he has in his heart that is left by his son's death. Jailing the killer, it satisfies legal justice, but it's never going to make things right. How do you make up for that? What sort of restitution is even possible, or retribution is even possible? How does legal justice deal with that? But forgiveness created something new. It went beyond seeking restitution. It went beyond seeking retribution, and it facilitated restoration. That the way of mercy and the way of forgiveness, they don't just balance the books. They create something new. They go further. In the same way that God's forgiveness of us didn't just cancel out a debt, it gave us a new life, and we become part of God's restoration program. Our lives are restored, and we participate in God's restoration of program of the whole world. But for that father to forgive, in the same way for God to forgive, it cost a lot. Someone had to pick up the bill, and it was that father. And it's been our father. That's how justice is satisfied in the way of forgiveness and mercy. And it's not fair. And the temptation for us is to think, well, then people just get away with things then, you know? That's just cheap grace. It's not cheap. There's nothing cheap about forgiveness. There's nothing cheap about the person who has been offended against picking up the bill for that. As I say, they live with that for the rest of their life. There's nothing cheap about that at all. But that is the cost of forgiveness. We don't exact payment or punishment from people. We forgive. We absorb the cost. And we let them go. And in that process, we begin to create something new. It's not fair, it's not cheap, but it is powerful. And it's what saves us. We're going to go into communion now, and I just want to finish by quoting something I read while I was preparing for this. And I think it's important, as we take communion this morning, I want us to think about forgiveness and justice, and how God satisfies justice through forgiveness, and how we can satisfy justice through forgiveness. And it says this: the cross does not represent God's mercy being tamed by God's anger. The cross demonstrates that God's mercy is much bigger than we think. God's arms are outstretched so wide that we are able to nail them to a cross. The cost of sin and death enter the very heart and life of God. Instead of demanding that we pay what we cannot, instead of punishing us for not paying what we cannot, this God accepts the loss, loving until the end, even Jesus' murderers. The embrace of God is bigger than our capacity to ruin the relationship. That is what has been done for us. And in this parable, Jesus says, fundamentally, that's how it is to be for you with others. This morning, I'd like us to think, is there anyone that we have just simply not forgiven? Is there anyone we're still trying to exact some sort of restitution from? Is there anyone we're trying to exact some sort of punishment or inflict some sort of punishment on to make us feel better about ourselves? And are we prepared to pay the price that God paid himself by absorbing that injustice? Are we prepared to pay the cost for the sins that we forgive? Thank you, and I'll see you next week.